Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, as much fun as Verdi's Anvil Chorus is, it'll take more than a band of hammer-wielding gypsies to pound New York City Opera back into shape. Welcome to Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer, and in the next hour, how the music world is coping with the recession from city opera to rank-and-file orchestra players. And later, the band Frightened Rabbit share the lush indie rock of their album Midnight Organ Fight when they play live. But first, after a tumultuous search process, New York City Opera has named conductor and impresario George Steele as its next general manager. For 11 years, George served as executive director of Columbia University's Miller Theater. There he put together a slate of innovative theatrical and musical programming, often with modern and early music bent to it. Now his task is to help shore up the perilous finances of the Lincoln Center Company and put it back on solid artistic footing. In a moment, we'll get some perspective from a seasoned opera watcher and blogger, but first joining us is the man himself, George Steele, the next general manager of the New York City Opera. George, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Oh, thanks so much, John. It's great to be on the show.
Last time you were on the show, you were leaving New York to take over at the Dallas Opera. That was not so long ago. What brought you back so fast?
Well, it was inconceivable to me when I went down that I would be back so fast. And when I was first sort of initially approached in about mid-December by New York City Opera, I thought there was no way I could do this. But I began to think about the opera and about its importance to me and about opera in the country, and to realize what I knew all along, that it's, to me, the number one job in the country. It was the opportunity of a lifetime, and I really had to take it seriously.
For folks who aren't aware of the backstory, in February of 07, New York City Opera named Gérard Mortier their general director, a man who had scandalized many, but also had really taken things like the Salzburg Festival to the next level in terms of programming and publicity. But when the board at City Op was unable to match his budget demands, he withdrew in November before even fully taking on the job. So, you know, he clearly did not see this as the opportunity of a lifetime. What's on your agenda that makes this such a plum job?
Well, you know, as I was while I was in Dallas planning future seasons, and I began to think about all the great repertoire that I want to do and hunting around for wonderful pieces, I found that all trails led to City Opera. That they were there first. I thought, how about Gina Stera's opera Don Rodrigo? And lo and behold, City Opera did it with someone called Placido Domingo in his New York performance debut. And on and on. I mean, I've been to so many wonderful performances there, and their mission resonates so closely with my priorities. I mean, you know my work from Miller Theater, and it's in some ways a reflection of who I am, and City Opera just seems like a dream job to me.
Well, now, you're going to a company that has $15 million in debt. They've been actually spending out of their endowment. They canceled much of the current season. How do you turn that around?
The answer is, I mean, yes, City Opera has an enormous number of challenges. Many of them are the same challenges that companies all across the country are facing, and you'll talk about more of that in the show. But I am confident that we have wonderful times ahead of us.
Well, one of the things that we did after the holiday break, actually our first show back from break, was invite Michael Kaiser from the Kennedy Center on the program. And as you know, he's consulting with New York City Opera on restructuring or sort of reviving the opera house there. And he talked at some length about things like, you know, you can't save your way to health. You know, you have to put the programming first. So how much of what was some fairly adventurous programming that Gérard Mortier left in place, how much of that do you think you'll actually stick with?
Well, I don't think much of that is firmly in place. It's premature for me to comment on exactly what agreements are on because I haven't reviewed everything. But I think next season we will see a smaller season for the purpose of our sort of comeback, and then we'll return to a more sustainable, fuller season in subsequent years.
So there were plans for a Philip Glass opera based on the life of Walt Disney.
Right. Right, and there was a Charles Warren Commission. There's all kinds of stuff. I think, as far as the two commissions, I can't speak authoritatively about the exact fate of those things. I read in the paper that Gerard Mortier is attempting to place those projects elsewhere. Mm. But in terms of some of the productions, and what I know about Gerard's season is what I read in the papers, I think we're going to present other things. I think those projects are probably not moving forward next season.
Now, you were known during your tenure at the Miller Theater for doing both very modern and very ancient music, you know, the most contemporary of the modernists and the minimalists and what have you, but also early music, Renaissance music. Not so much in between, you know, where most of mainstream opera's repertoire falls.
So you say. But if you look at what New York City Opera does, they do all kinds of things. It's true that at Miller Theater, well, number one, we couldn't accommodate an orchestra very often. When we did orchestra stuff, we had to go off-site. But New York City Opera plays a much different role in the cultural life of New York City and, in fact, of the world than Miller Theater did in the New York cultural life. I mean, we have a different role at the opera, and we will represent a broader swath of repertoire than Miller Theater does, I think.
But will you be trying to bring in both the early and the modern ends of the opera spectrum to City Opera?
Without a doubt. It's not my bringing it in. It's my returning to City Opera's historic mission. I mean, they have been doing that for years. And it's my hope moving forward to sharpen the profile of the opera and to reinforce what has always been its mandate, which is, again, early music, world premieres, important 20th century pieces, reimagining great 19th century works, uncovering works of the 19th and early 20th century that people haven't paid attention to. They've been at it for a long time.
We're speaking with George Steele, who has just been named the next general manager of New York City Opera after 11 years at Columbia University's Miller Theater and all of 4 months at the Dallas Opera. Did you even have time to sell your place here in New York?
Well, I think I would have been criticized for a fool if I had sold my place right when we moved because the market wasn't looking good. So the good news is we still have it. It is a very bittersweet thing to contemplate leaving Dallas. The people there have been extraordinarily good to me and to my family. And the opera company there is a wonderful company, and it's a wonderful job to have. I mean, they are moving into a glorious new opera house in the fall. They are in good financial shape, and they are buffered from the current economic woes. Because they're moving into this new house, their donors and ticket buyers are extra motivated. It's just a glorious company, and I am incredibly grateful to the people there, especially the board leadership, for their unflagging understanding and support as I talk to them about this difficult transition.
So they've got enough money and a great new house. You're coming to New York City Opera, not enough money, and a house that people have been howling about for its acoustics for many, many years now. Is there anything you can do, you know, coming in as the new general manager of City Opera about either of those challenges?
Many things. There's already been some significant work done by Michael Kaiser and others about the budgetary situation. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, but those challenges are frankly part of the appeal of the job to me. And in terms of the house, you may recall that it's changed its name. It's now the David H. Koch Theater, and that is not purely cosmetic. There are, in fact, extraordinary renovations going on that will expand the orchestra pit, will give us the opportunity to raise and lower the orchestra. We can affect the balance between singers and orchestra, and there's some other acoustic interventions which I think will make it a whole new experience when people come to the theater this coming season.
All right. George Steele, the incoming general manager of the New York City Opera. George, great to have you back in New York.
It's going to be a joy. Thank you so much.
And thanks for joining us on Soundcheck today. George Steele told us that the next season might not be a full one, but it's on the way back. The current season essentially consists of this opera, Antony and Cleopatra by Samuel Barber, which is being performed tonight and tomorrow at Carnegie Hall by members of the New York City Opera. And joining us now to kind of follow up on the story is James Jordan, editor of the opera website Parterre.com. He's been following this story from the very beginning. James, welcome back.
Hi, John.
Now, the opera world is a very tight-knit one. It's very gossipy. Did you see all of this coming?
I'd like to say I saw it all coming clearly, but I don't think anyone can say that. There were some hints along the way, but my alter ego, La Checa, the name I write under on Parterre.com, actually wrote a piece on December 24th with the headline, "Why George Steele Will Say No to New York City Opera."
Mm.
So,
well, it sounds like initially he did say no.
Well, that's very charitable of you, but I think the thing is, everyone is really quite surprised by this choice, probably including Mr. Steele himself. And so it does come out of, I won't say it comes out of nowhere, but it does sort of come out of left field. We really weren't expecting it.
And in a tight-knit opera world, has George burned some bridges by leaving Dallas in the lurch after only being there 4 months? Will that come back and haunt him?
That's hard to say. That is hard to say. Again, Mr. Steele is kind of an unknown quantity around the opera community because he's worked at the Miller Theater and done a lot of really good work there, but that's sort of outside the mainstream. So it's not necessarily, in other words, he doesn't have a reputation that much in the opera community among, you know, people who run opera houses, people who go to opera mm-hmm. houses. So it's a little hard to know his personality. He certainly seems like an intelligent guy, and you know, he certainly talks a good game. So that's, you know, that's always important.
Well, I will be very
interested to see, you know, how this next season plays out.
Yeah, I mean, in 11 years at Miller Theater, he proved himself to be somewhat of a live wire on the music scene here in New York. Of course, we're talking about a huge difference in scale, going from a 600-seat theater to the New York City Opera. Is it true that Francesca Zambello was sort of the backup choice to George Steele?
This is what I am told. I mean, I'm told this through my gossip network, through my vast and many tentacled gossip network. And Ms. Zambello said this herself in speaking to the New York Times yesterday because it was online yesterday, this morning. Though I believe Susan Baker, who's the head of the board at City Opera, denies that this ever happened. So I'm sure there was some intrigue going into it. Ms. Zambello is sort of the opposite of George Steele because she is as connected as anybody in the world of opera. She's, you know, worked at this professionally for over two decades now. She's worked in every opera house in the world. She knows every singer. So she's extremely well connected. Whereas Mr. Steele's background is an administration of a different kind of program altogether from an opera house. So, you know, they had two ways they could go, and they chose to go with Mr. Steele.
Yeah. What's the biggest challenge you'll face, James?
I think the biggest challenge is going to be getting an audience into the theater and paying to see opera. That's the challenge everyone has. I have noticed, I'm sure you've been aware of this too, that the Metropolitan, which is, of course, a very well-established theater, has recently been selling tickets to weekend performances for $25 mm-hmm. for orchestra seats. And these are performances with people like Renee Fleming, Angela Gheorghiu, Daniel Barenboim conducting Tristan. So you would think these would be
premier
the
seats.
Biggest
yeah.
hot tickets in, and yet they are having to sell some of them in a lottery in order to fill the house. Now, this is no criticism of the Met's administration. You know, it is a recession. People don't have a lot of money to spend on this. But by that token, in order to get people into the New York State Theater again after they've gotten out of the habit and have them paying to do it and to have them coming back again and again in a season is not going to be easy. It's going to take a big carrot to get them in there.
It will be a challenge. And James, I'm glad you mentioned the Metropolitan Opera's attempt to sell more tickets, because in a moment we'll pick up on the theme of how arts organizations are coping with tough economic times. But we've been speaking with James Jordan, editor of the opera website, Parterre.com, for his reaction to the appointment of George Steele as the new general manager of New York City Opera. James, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks very much.
It's always great to be here, John.
Well, tonight and tomorrow night, soprano Lauren Flanagan and baritone Teddy Tau Rhodes star in concert performances of this opera by Samuel Barber, Antony and Cleopatra at Carnegie Hall. That is essentially the New York City opera season for this year. And in a moment, we will continue our conversation, broaden it out a bit, to look at how the global economic crisis has affected the music world, from big orchestras to the little guys, individual musicians. And then coming up later, the only thing we have to fear is Frightened Rabbit. The Scottish band brings its tales of heartbreak and humor to our studio with a live performance later on Soundcheck.
We can both get old-fashioned, put the brakes near.